11. This is from the point where the Yosef, we did last week the story of Yosef made himself known, the reconciliation between Yosef and the brothers. Immediately,
was it just after he reconciled with them and he
told them not to worry, not to be concerned, that he would not bear any grudge against them? What was the next thing that he dealt with? What was the next issue?
Yeah. If you take a look at the
Pesukim, this is going back a little bit to chapter 45. As soon as he's finished with his words of consolation and reconciliation and so forth, the very next thing in chapter 45, verse 9, is hurry. If you read the sentences, it strikes. He's not just telling him to go back and bring his father and his family down, but with tremendous urgency. Hurry and bring up my father and tell him, thus said your son Joseph, God has made me a master over all of Egypt. Come down to me, don't wait. And you will dwell in the land of Goshen, and you'll be close to me, you and your children and your children's children and your animals, your flocks, and everything that you have. So what is he basically telling him? The first priority was to get Jacob to come down quickly, immediately. And to do so, he tells them to make sure you describe the situation accurately. Tell them about everything that I have, my tremendous powers, my position over here. And I'll feed you there. I will feed you there because there is yet 5 years. In other words, this occurred at what point? This occurred during the second year of the famine. The second year of the famine is when the brothers came down. You know, the whole incident, the accusation, the spies, and the reconciliation takes place in the second year. So they still had 5 years of famine, of the 5 years of famine left, and he gives them instructions to come down and bring everything down. And then he, again, there's a lot of repetition over here, emphasis. And you see with your own eyes, and with the eyes of Benjamin, and Benjamin will see, that I'm the one who's speaking to you. In other words, you see with your own eyes that everything that I'm saying is true. And then again, you should tell my father all of my honor, all of my power in Egypt, and everything that you've seen. And again, he says, and hurry, and bring him down here, quickly. So, it's not clear exactly what is this tremendous rush? What's he so concerned about? First of all, that they should hurry. Don't delay, and to run back and tell him. And why does he have to emphasize to convince them about all the power that he has here? You know, what is his tremendous need, the tremendous urgency behind all this? And maybe hold off a while, all right? Hold off. My answer. I think you'll agree with me that it requires explanation. If it's why, what's the problem? I mean, basically, we understand that Yosef wants to be reunited with his father, that's for sure. That's going to happen. But just to have that occur doesn't require all of this. It doesn't seem to warrant everything that he's saying over here. Yeah, or he could take a trip, not that crazy, that Yosef should visit his father. That's also something to consider. It's not inconceivable. Or that he can come down for a visit. But he's obviously talking about much more than that. He's talking about complete, you know, transplanting the entire family. Not just Jacob, but everybody should come down. There's a tremendous urgency over here. That everybody should come down and to be resettled and to do so quickly. And tell them about my power. Tell them, he keeps repeating it, that they should hurry. And they should tell him about everything that they've seen and how much power he has. What is the necessity for all of this? Everything, to get together with Jacob, they can get together. He can come down for a trip. The brothers came down to purchase food, and they went back home again. So in the same way, Jacob could come down, and they could visit. Then they could discuss the future. What was this, you know, why did everything have to be decided right now? They could visit whether Jacob will stay, whether he'll go back, whether Joseph would stay. Maybe Joseph would go back too. Shouldn't the son go back to the father? Should they all go back to Israel? What's going on here? Okay. Now, let's hold off on that for a minute. Let's turn now to 47:11. And this is what happens next is that, well, maybe I should point it out. What happens next is that the brothers take leave, and the word reaches, of course, Paro finds out about all this. That's in 45:16. The word that was heard in the house of Paro, saying the brothers of Joseph have come. And this was good in the eyes of Paro and the eyes of his servants. They were very happy about that when they found out. And the commentaries point out that they found out that these were great men, that these were prestigious people. And they were very happy about that because it was somewhat of an embarrassment that the ruler was an individual. What? Yeah, like he was a stranger, like someone who'd been kidnapped. It's not that much of an honor for the nation. So when they found out that he comes from a royal background, he has a great family, and so forth, they were happy about that. And Paro gave instructions to tell them to load their animals with food and to bring it back, and to, in 18, and bring your father and your household. Apparently he had heard about his father. He wanted to meet him. Not only did he tell them to just come down, but he wants them to settle there. He wants them to settle there, and I'll give you the take a look at 18. And I'll give you the best of the land, and you can eat the fat of the land. And then he instructs them, he sends wagons and so forth, and he tells them in verse 20, Paro seems to take up the same theme as Joseph. Don't be concerned about your possessions. Don't worry about a thing. In other words, don't delay because you have to pack, you're afraid to leave. Just leave, whatever. I'll provide you with everything you need. So it's an extremely generous offer. And they do that, and the brothers return, and you know the story, they return, they tell Jacob everything they've seen, and the brothers and the family come down to Egypt. Now, you go to 47:11. Let's analyze this story a little bit. See what it's about. Here, it says that Joseph settled his father and his brothers after they've come down, and he gave them a foothold, he gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Paro commanded. So now the brothers are down, and Joseph has seen to it that they're settled in a very good place. He's kept his word. And he fed them, he provided his father and his brothers, and their entire household. Now here it says, bread, lefi hatav, according to the children. What does that mean? Lechem lefi hatav. I'm sorry? Portion. Which indicates, not so much. Not, in other words, in measured amounts. He provided them with food, but in measured amounts. Not without excess. Basically, what they needed. Just what they needed. Okay? Now let's take up the story in verse 13. Now it says that there was no food in the entire land because the famine was very powerful. And the entire land became weary. The land of Egypt and the land of Canaan because of the famine. So now the famine takes tremendous hold in the land. Then it says that Yosef collected all of the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan with the food that they were selling. So Yosef made tremendous amounts of money. Tremendous amounts of money. Both from the people of Egypt and also people from Canaan came, because the famine was not just in Egypt. And Joseph brought the money to the house of Pharaoh. Okay? Now, the question, what's the point of the Torah pointing this out towards? That Joseph collected a lot of money, enormous sums of money, for the food that he had sold, and that he brought it to the house of Pharaoh. What's so important about that? Bear that in mind. Then what happens next is that they ran out of money. All the money was used up. So now they're in a state of famine and there's no money left. The money was consumed in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan. Now all of Egypt came to Yosef and said, give us bread. And why should we die before you? Because we're lacking money. So now you have a situation of total poverty. Of course, until this point, they at least had money, so they were using up all their savings and buying food. But now they ran out of money. So the people came to Joseph, who was in charge, and they begged for food, because we don't have any money. So Joseph said, give me your possessions, your animals, your possessions. So apparently they weren't totally impoverished. They didn't have any money, but they did have possessions. And I'll give it to you for your possessions, for your animals, essentially your animals, if there's no money left. So they brought their animals to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food for the horses and for the sheep and the cattle, the donkeys, and he apportioned food for all of, in exchange for all of their animals in that year. Of course, the question is, what year are we talking about over here? What year? Well, we don't know, yeah. It's interesting. So what happened? Now that year ended. That year was complete now. And apparently in that year, they used up all their reserves in terms of animals. So now they've got nothing left. And they came to him in the second year. In the second year. Now there's a tremendous controversy amongst the commentaries what that second year is. Is that the second year of the famine? Or you know, what's that second year? Or the fourth year, whatever. And they said to him, basically, that we've got nothing left. We have nothing left. We've completed, all of our money is gone, and all of our animals are gone. We have nothing left before our master, except for our bodies and our land. Okay? So now they come to Joseph again, and they've got nothing left except it's our land. They have their land, and they have their bodies. Why should we die before your sight? Us and our land. Purchase us and our land for food. And we will be, ourselves and our land will be slaves to Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die. And the land will not become desolate. So now, what's their proposal? Now they come with a proposal. The proposal is, they're willing to give up their land and to become slaves themselves as well. All right? Okay, let's finish up the story, then we'll deal with the questions. So Yosef purchased all the land of Egypt. Yosef purchased all the land of Egypt to Pharaoh, because each person that sold his field, because the famine had become extremely powerful, and all the land now belonged to Pharaoh. And the people, what did he do? He resettled. Now Joseph undertakes a tremendous resettlement program. He resettled them, just redistributes them, takes them off their land, and resettles them throughout the different places of Egypt. Resettlement. So, of course, what's the purpose of this resettlement? Okay. However, the land of the Kohanim, that's the religious leaders, the priests, he didn't purchase, because this was a special dispensation to the priests from Pharaoh, and they ate their portion that Pharaoh had given to them. Therefore, they didn't sell. They didn't have to sell their land, because they had special dispensation. They had a special allotment. Okay. And Joseph said to the people, behold, I've purchased you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Here is seed, and you may now plant the fields. So that's interesting, because how could they plant the fields? If we're talking about the years of the famine, so apparently the fields, they weren't produced. They were producing, if they could produce... Yeah, if they could produce food, then they wouldn't have needed it. Well, we have to find out. And then he said like this, when, with regard to the produce, when the field produces food, you will give a fifth to Paro, and four portions will be for you, to be used for seed, for the field, and for your food, and for your necessities, and for what is in your household, and to feed your children, your family. And they said, you've sustained us. Hachi Yisani, you've kept us alive. We found favor in the eyes of my master, and we shall be servants to Paro. We shall be slaves to Paro. And then Joseph established it as a law concerning the land of Egypt for Paro, for the fifth, except for the land of the priest, that did not belong to Paro. And it says that Israel lived in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they took hold therein, and they multiplied, and it became exceedingly, big. They grew and multiplied exceedingly so. Now, let's just analyze the segment over here, this last segment, where the people come to Yosef. Yeah? Who talks about that? Now, there are even, but the question is, how did he give them seed to plant if the situation was so bad and they wouldn't produce anything, right? If it was the years of famine, there was no point in planting. So, the Ramban, there is a Rashi that says that when Yaakov came, the situation improved and it wasn't so bad anymore. That's why he gave them seed. There is a Chazal, there is a statement that when Yaakov came down, the situation, generally speaking, did improve. But that's difficult. Ramban disagrees with that. Because if that's the case, then the dream would not be true. And the Joseph presented he said what God is doing, that this dream is a prophetic message to Paro, that there's going to be 7 years of prosperity, then there's going to be 7 years of a famine. Now, if the situation improved after the second year, because Jacob came down, and that would be the meaning the dream didn't come true. So he disagrees. And he says that this occurred in the, this story, when they came to Yosef, occurs in the sixth year. And he works it out very nicely. It makes a lot of sense. In the sixth year of the second 7 years, of the years of famine. Okay. That's when this occurs. No. The brothers came down in the second year. The story that we're reading now takes place, there were 2 years. And they had run out of money. Let's read it. It makes sense. A lot of sense according to the Ramban.
In the third year they gave him money,
and
the fourth year they gave him the animals, and the fifth year they gave him the
animals,
and the sixth year he gave
him the land. Yeah. Now, let's analyze this a little more closely. See, it's interesting. There's a big... Alright, we'll take all the questions. But it seems to me there's a major change in the attitude of the people. Because when they first come to Yosef... His own brothers were completely safe.
They were like Kohanim.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. They probably had...
Right. So he didn't take the brothers' money and... Yeah. So why did he give them... Okay. I didn't...
Well, we'll take that out. Yeah. But the brothers had a very good situation. I don't know if... I mean, the same deal. They didn't have to work the field. He said he guaranteed he would take care of them. He would feed them and so forth. Now, but the attitude of the people at first, they came to Yosef when they didn't have any money, but they had other things, dead animals. Now, why did they, at first, they didn't offer to sell their animals. They didn't say, well, give us food in exchange for the animals. They didn't do that. They just came and asked, they demanded food. Later on, after we took care of that, and he said, well, 1 second, I'll give you food, but you have to give the animals. Then, the second time, when they ran out of animals, see, according to Ramban, that is in the seventh year. That's why it makes sense that he gave them seed for planting, because the seventh year was the last year of the famine. So then, you should plant in that year, because the eighth year is going to, everything will return to normal, so then the earth will give forth. So that makes sense according to the Rabban, why he gave them food. Why he gave them seed. But they got to the other extreme, because in the second, when they came to him the second time, they offered their land and themselves as slaves. And Joseph was kind. Joseph didn't accept them as slaves. Joseph only took the land, right? But he did not accept their offer as slaves. So it seems like they're going from one, it seems like there's a major change, because the first time they come around, they're just asking for food. Give us food. Yeah. And they have, why did they think about that idea? What do you mean? They didn't have money, but they had valuables. They had animals that are worth a lot. Then the second time around, they're prepared to go even further. And then we have to understand, what was the rationale behind Joseph's plan? What was the rationale? He took all the land, he redistributed them, and then he gives them a fantastic offer. You see, for example, they felt they were satisfied with the deal. But they said, you've sustained us. In other words, they recognize more than that. Really, it's more than that. He saved their life. In other words, one thing, things should be defined accurately. It's one thing to do a person a favor. It's one thing to help a person. It's another thing to save a person's life. I mean, when you have a tub, when you recognize, you should acknowledge exactly what was done. If somebody helped you, thank you for the help. If you saved the person's life, then you don't just say thank you for helping me. You should mention, you saved my life. So, in the end, they said you saved our lives. But why did they say that? Why did they say that at the very end? You see, when did they say that? They said that after Joseph put down the terms, right? But Joseph had saved their life even before that. When did Joseph save their life? When he said, right. When he said to them, when he bought the, at verse 20. At verse 20, when he accepted their offer, that he resettled them, at that point already, he had saved their life. They didn't mention that until later. Yeah, question? That Yosef did not utilize the situation, the 7 good years and the famine, did not use the famine for selfish motivation, for selfish purposes. Had he wanted to, I mean, we have to be amazed. Many people have asked the opposite question, that in a situation like that, Pharaoh, why did the Pharaoh use the economic power that he had? Because the famine was not just in the land of Egypt, it was in other lands. He could have enslaved, He could have enslaved other lands. He could have extended his power, but did not do so. Instead, he just set up a system where he rationed food. He rationed food to the nation and to other nations in a very just, very kind kind of a way. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said that this was the influence of Joseph. That if it wasn't for Joseph, any ruler at that time would have used the power that he had for his own advancement. But because of the influence of Yosef's point was that we shouldn't take advantage and should maintain the various civilizations. Now, did you have a question? Yosef had made the phenomenon known. And Yosef had said that let's prepare in the 7 good years. Had everybody, and he did. Yosef studied the sciences very, very carefully. And it took a tremendous amount of wisdom to be able to preserve. They didn't have the modern methods of preservation. So Yosef did it very carefully. The rest of Egypt was experiencing tremendous prosperity in the 7 years. Now, those people that were wise, were intelligent, would have used, knowing the, we don't know how every Egyptian reacted to the situation, how many believed or didn't believe what they did, but any person that wanted to had the same information that Yosef had. And therefore, the answer is, don't indulge yourself in the 7 years, but be careful, because you're going to have 7 years that are going to wipe away everything. Which meant that if you would have lived carefully in the 7 years, you would not have been wiped out by the 7 bad years.
Then why did they come from?
Because they apparently didn't go to Joseph and learn the wisdom. They wanted to be on their own. Yeah, they didn't. Joseph did not withhold. All he did was, though, he did, by the way, had Joseph not did what he had not done any of this, then they all would have been wiped out. He spent his time during the 7 years touring the country, setting up storage depots. He was involved in a whole system of storing food, which saved the world, basically, especially saved Egypt. Now, he didn't do it for his own wealth. He was not motivated. He gave it to Pharaoh. He didn't do it himself. We have to understand, though, what, you know, why, what the point the Torah is pointing at, that he gathered all the money and gave it to Paro. Yes. It's like this. That they, the people themselves went through a bit of a shock over there. It would seem that they were unprepared. Maybe they didn't believe completely. Maybe they didn't believe completely, but there were seven, you see, prosperity has a way of affecting people. When a person's in a state of, when things are going well, it's hard to imagine that it's ever going to be different. You know, people, so no matter, exactly, you see it during the time of the 80s, when things were going well and people were making money and, you know, the markets were booming, every market, Reagan, whatever you want to call it, and kids were coming out of colleges and making 80,000, 100,000. You know, there's a sense that it's going to, well, not everybody, of course, but but there's a sense that it's going to be there forever. So I don't know exactly what effect this had on the Egyptians, but that 7 years of tremendous prosperity, you have a certain sense of confidence, it's always going to be this way. Then the years of famine came, and the years of famine were terrible, terrible years. It's like a lot of people went through a trauma. You know, they lost, you know, with the recession, and they lost everything, and it's a tremendous trauma. Now, when they first came to Yosef, see, what they were doing was, they were using up their money. They were spending their money to purchase food. Then they came to Yosef, they had run out of money. Now, when they ran out of money, so apparently they were stunned. And they came to Yosef, you're the leader, you're in charge, you have the food, you have to give us food. They demanded, exactly. See, at that point they weren't fully attuned to the reality of what had occurred. Because they still wanted to hold on. I mean, a person, it's a difficult thing. See, a person looks at money, it's hard enough for people to spend money. And people look at money in different ways. I mean, a person has a certain amount of money, he looks at this as the money I use for spending, for purchasing the things I need. Then a person always has other money, like he's saving for a rainy day, like his bank account. That's different. He's not going to dip into that unless that's for an emergency. You see what I'm saying? Now, in this situation, they were spending their reserves. That must have been painful enough. They had to spend all the money they had set aside. Then when they lost all their money, that was it. They didn't think to give up. It's a tremendous breakdown of an individual to give up all of his sources, his house, his land, even the animals. A person, his possessions, he looks at his possessions in a different light than he looks at his money. Our money is to be used for purchasing things, but the afterthought, thought, once you have to give away your animal, today it would be like your house, your car, you know, your objects, and so on and so forth. That's a completely different situation. So they came to Yosef and they demanded food. Yosef told them, I can't just give you food. It's not, you're going to have to go further. You're going to have to give up your possessions. You don't have money, okay, but you still have things that are valuable. You still have things that have worth. So therefore you made a deal with them. We have to continue. In other words, he didn't introduce welfare, like I'm just going to give it to you for nothing. You have other things, you have to buy it, you have to purchase it. That took place in the sixth year. And it says he rationed very carefully. He did it in a very intelligent way so that everybody would have what they needed. He did it to sustain the people. Now, after that year, they were completely impoverished. They had nothing. See, then, once they had gone through that, once they experienced that, they looked at everything in a totally different light. Then they said, we have nothing left. We can't purchase anymore. So, what are we going to do? We're willing to, just for survival, we'll give up our land and we'll become slaves. We'll do whatever we have to do to live. Yeah? On the surface, to be a little bit harsh, perhaps even cruel, to do this, but bear in mind, and we're going to see how it works, in the end, they came to him with tremendous gratitude. But if you take a look, if you want to use the analogy of today's welfare, the people on welfare do not have any feelings of joy. They have nothing but anger and hatred for the state. They have nothing but anger and hatred. But all the welfare and all everything that's dumped upon people, all the programs, never. Any group that's getting money from the government is angry and dissatisfied. It could be getting... You take the case of AIDS, which, from what I read, gets more money as a portion for that than for cancer and heart and all the other things. And they're... Whatever, I mean... Well, obviously, it's all relative. Yes, it could not. But the point is, there's many... We could discuss that at a separate time. The morality of how money is apportioned seems to me is not, in this situation, is completely unjust. There's a complete difference between something like cancer and heart disease as opposed to this, which is basically a behavioral phenomenon. And by and large, I would say the overwhelming majority of cases of AIDS could be eliminated by behavioral changes. There are a few exceptions. Tragedies like the blood transfusion or that girl Vlada, which is a tremendous tragedy, but that you can't change around the whole order of priorities because of a few exceptions. There are many, many more people that are suffering from illnesses that have that's not behavioral. They can't control it. All right, let's leave that aside. The point is that no matter how much money any group is given, they're dissatisfied, and they don't say that. There's no attitude of thankfulness of appreciation, but this condemnation. This condemnation. So it's not so simple to just give money away. Alright. Now, what did Joseph do? Let's just follow through on what he did. They came at this point and they realized they were totally at your mercy. That's the reality of the situation. And that's life. That's reality. Reality is Joseph had used wisdom. There are certain things, life doesn't conform to a person's fantasies. These were the realities. There were 7 very, very good years. There were 7 years of famine. This was known. Joseph made it known. Didn't hide the information. It was up to people to use their intelligence. Joseph was not the only person with a brain. There were other people. They could have acted differently. They could have used their wisdom. Let's get together during the 7 years with Joseph. People could have come together. They knew that he was involved in the business of storing food. They could have studied his methods. They could have made partnerships. They could have made arrangements, and this never would have come to pass. They were now, excuse me, let me think. They were now in a situation where they were facing the consequences, of their own actions. And the calamity that had befallen them was not something which they had no control over. It wasn't people that had been subjected to a sudden earthquake. They'd all gone through the 7 good years. They all knew what was coming. They all had the same opportunity that Joseph had. So it wasn't a situation of people that were suddenly hit with an earthquake, some misfortune that was out of their control. So they came to Joseph. Joseph said, you have to face the consequences. You have to live in the world of reality. You have money, you've got to buy food. Now what's the next situation? You've run out of money? Oh, 1 second. You have other things. You've got to live your life in the world of reality. You've got to deal with the consequences. You can purchase food. There's no reason to give away food for free as long as you can purchase it. It doesn't belong to you. This food does not belong to you. This food belongs to the state. It belongs to the state. It wasn't stolen from you. So therefore, it was 100% right, 100% just. He trained them in justice. This is the way we have to live. That's the situation. He wasn't cruel. He didn't raise the prices. Okay. Now, the next, once they saw, see, once that emotion was broken down, and I think it's a lot of what the Lord was saying, he was actually helping them. Because they had broken, sometimes you have to break down that emotion. A person has to face the reality. If you have to lose, you have to lose your possession. They now came back in a totally different framework. And they were in the world of reality. They said, well, we have to live. We have no choice. We don't want to die. So if this is what it demands, we have to give up our land. They're prepared to see the second time around. You see, they're on a much higher level now. They're not asking for any handouts. They're saying this is the reality. If we have to, they realize that they're in no position to make demands. That they're totally at the mercy of Joseph. So they say, we're willing to give up. We'll give up. What do we have? We have our bodies. Lo nechafei. See, that's what they mean. We haven't withheld anything. This is it. Now we're dealing in your framework. We're not asking for something for nothing. What do you want? This is all we've got. Joseph, with tremendous wisdom, brought them around to this situation. Amazing. Where they were prepared. At first, they were not prepared to give up their animals for food. Right? He brought them around to a situation where they were prepared to give up their land and themselves and become slaves to Pharaoh. Amazing how he was able to accomplish this. Now, what did Joseph do? Joseph said, and listen very carefully, anyone that this idea of a Stalin-esque comparison, no Stalin, this is not anything to do. Joseph said, no, that's too much. He wouldn't do that. Now you're offering too much. He had the ability now, he had total power over them. He could have taken them all as slaves. He could have worked out any deal that he wanted to, because basically they would have just taken subsistence. He says, no, that's not good. Because everything that I've done, I have not done to harm you in any way. Everything that I've done, I've done for your benefit. And therefore what he did was two things. He removed them from the land. He took the land. The land I will take. So now he has all the land. It's extremely important. And it was important that he redistributed them. Why did he redistribute them? There's two reasons. I'm sorry? Well, that's the second reason. There's a deeper, that'll all tie in with the protection. Yeah. Major resettlement. Now, he realized very well, you can understand the point, he realized very well that a person has a tremendous emotional attachment to his particular place. And it's one thing to say, you know, he realized what would happen, that they'll say in a few years, in a moment of weakness, we gave it up. But if they're still sitting on the same land, they're going to regard that as theirs. So he realized that in order for this thing to have any kind of permanence, he'd have to uproot them from their own. Now at that moment, and then they're settled in a new land. Now when they're settled in a new place, they're not going to have that emotional attachment. They know it's not theirs. They know it belongs, you see? Yeah, you understand why that's very important. The person is attached to his own place. And even if a piece of paper, technically speaking, is no longer yours, it belongs to the government, then you regard it psychologically as your own. You know, that's why sometimes the government comes to evict farmers from their farms, they'll take up guns, they'll fight. Even though they'll acknowledge that legally, I don't care, legally a document, this is my land, my fathers lived there, my grandfathers, you follow? They're gonna look at it psychologically as their own. So he was extremely intelligent, Joseph. He realized that in order for this to succeed, he's gonna have to redistribute them. And at this point in time, they wouldn't resist, because they're hungry. They looked at it as a great favor. Now, there's a deeper reason, and this ties in with the deeper motivation. And that is that Rashi points out that another reason why he moved them, why he redistributed them, was that he wanted to remove a blemish from his brothers. Because, see, this is one of his deep motivations, of course, is to set up a situation of permanence for his family. You know that that's where they're going to be dwelling, you know, for the next period of history. So, the brothers are looked upon as farmers, as outsiders, as foreigners, rather. I'm sorry? Exactly. You see, there's a Rashi, go live, as people who've been exiled. There's a certain emotional attitude towards the foreigner. When a person, you know, the people that are there, even in America, which is a country of immigrants, but, you know, once you're settled, this is your place, the newcomer. So there's a certain, he's a greenhorn, he's a new... Now, this was a blemish which the brothers had to carry with them when they came down. So to remove that emotion, each person had to go to the stigma. There was a stigma of being a foreigner, of being exiled from your own place. People looked down upon him. Why did he come here? Because he couldn't stay in his own place. He had to leave. You see, he's a refugee. That's the point. Yeah, refugee, exactly. People, he's a refugee. A refugee is sort of like a stigma. Misfortune befell him. He's a refugee. So therefore, another, a deeper motivation was that now it was a whole nation of refugees. Everybody was in the same situation. And when you go through the same situation, you have a sympathy. You have to realize when a person It's true in many, many areas of life. It's hard, very often, you know, the person is limited in focus because he has sympathy for people, but certain things he doesn't sympathize with. And very often, it's the things that he's experienced. If you've experienced a certain illness, a certain disease, you have a child or this or whatever, you can understand it when somebody else goes through it. A lot of things that are very painful, we really shouldn't be that way, because you should learn how to sympathize with somebody even if you haven't experienced it. But that's the way we are. You learn from experiences. When you've gone through something like this, then, you know, farmers have lost their land and have become refugees, even within America, and had to resettle. And then they see a refugee, say, from Europe, from Russia, whatever the case may be, they're going to look at him with sympathy. Because there's a bond of identification. So what Yosef was trying to do over here was to create a bond of identification. Yeah. Remember, at the end, you would imagine that any person, any ruler that would do this to people, that would take away everything they've got, first all their possessions, then all their land, and redistribute them, they wouldn't look at him too favorably. But in the end, they came to him with nothing but praise and thanksgiving. You've kept us alive. You sustained us. They didn't know what to say to him. What did he do? The Ramban explained. The Ramban explained that they offered two things. They offered all their land, and they offered themselves as slaves. But Yosef refused to take them as slaves. He did not want to break them down completely. He did not want that. Instead, they said, this is what he said, they said that he should purchase them as slaves, working for the king, according to the will of the king. That's what they offered, just to stay alive. But he didn't want to. He just wanted to buy the land. And he made a deal with them that they would work the land forever. That was the deal that they made. That he's purchasing the land belongs to Pharaoh, and the condition is that they have to work the land. And they would be like sharecroppers. Like, you know, tenant farmers, sharecroppers, whatever you want to call it. For Pharaoh. Okay? Now, normally, when that's the situation, you know, this took place in America, this took place all over Europe, when you have a person who's working the land for somebody else, basically, the one who owns it gets the lion's share. And the one who's working gets the minimal, subsistence. If the guy is generous, he gives him a little bit more. That was the deal that he made with them. That is to say, the land belongs to Pharaoh. I don't want to take you as slaves, but I need people to work the land. I want you to work the land. But then he gives them a deal where normally it would be you get the one-fifth, four-fifths would go to Pharaoh. That's the way it normally would be. He made it just the opposite. Because I want you to take the four-fifths, and the one-fifth will go to Pharaoh as a tax, which is an unbelievable, that's what, 20? That's 20% tax, which is probably lower than our tax rate. It was an unbelievably generous offer. Unbelievably generous offer to do a thing like this. In other words, I'm going to give you a situation in which essentially you can continue to work as farmers, not just for subsistence, but to build up a life yourself, to become prosperous, and even to become wealthy. And I'm just taking 20%, 20% is going to be for Pharaoh. That you have to pay. You made them pay. They, he said, that's what he said. Behold, I purchased you and your land for Pharaoh, not as slaves, as you said, right? But rather, the land will be to him. And the Ramban says, it's fitting for the king, who's the master of the land, to take four fifths. That's the way it should be. And the fifth should be for you, just to keep yourself alive. But I will be very compassionate to you, and you'll take the four fifths, and you'll only give, we'll reverse the situation. In other words, Pharaoh will take the amount that a sharecropper would normally take. We'll reverse the whole situation. And he'll take the amount that the owner should take. That was what he did to them. Except the condition was, the condition was that they'd be attached to the land. That was the deal. Because he needed people to work the land. But of course he gave them such a fantastic offer that there'd be no reason for them to want to leave the land. So they'd have that idea that they were gaining the benefits of the land, but they wouldn't have that emotion of ownership that it was theirs, because they had given up all of it. In order to get this, to give up their land, to give it to Pharaoh, and to become redistributed. That's why they came and they said, take a look at 28. Then they said, you've hechi yisano. Oh, you've given us life. They realized what a great man he was. Nimsachein v'yeni Adonai. We found favor. Favor, this is, what's favor? The word chen itself, what is the word chen? Matnasinam. Matnasinam, you gave us the means for nothing. We weren't deserving of it. You gave us a tremendous gift. Now, Yosef had a reason for doing all of this. You see the tremendous wisdom. Yosef didn't act emotionally. It was obviously Yosef's objective was to do good for the people. He wanted to save the country, even though it was their fault. They had erred. They had not used their wisdom. He didn't want to destroy them. But he did not do so in an emotionalistic way. In fact, he acted in a way which at first glance appeared to be cold. Because when they first came, right, for food, why don't you, of course, give them food? Now, he did not treat them as people that would be welfare recipients. He realized that wouldn't be good for them. If he would have catered to their desire at that point, they never would have learned the lesson. Why? Because they acted stupidly, and they failed, and you have to allow a person to experience the consequences of his failure. And had he provided them with food at that point, then, he never would have gotten this sense of gratitude and appreciation, which was extremely important. Yes. Now, for this point over here, we read it in Eshes Chayil. It says, V'torah chesed al lashona. The Torah of compassion is on her lips. What do you mean, V'torah chesed? And chesed means compassion. Torah is wisdom. The wisdom of compassion is on her lips. Which means to say that the woman of valor, the Eshes Chayil, when you practice compassion, it can't just be an emotional response. It always has to be with wisdom. See, like in our society today, there's a lot of compassion. There is compassion, but it's compassion run amok. It's without wisdom. That's why there's compassion in the court for people that have committed terrible crimes and should be punished harshly and should be put away, should be dealt with differently. There's compassion with people that are homeless. There's compassion with people that don't want to work, that don't want to go to school, that don't want... There's a whole system of compassion which is basically designed to prevent people from facing the consequences of their actions in the criminal justice system, in the economic system. That is an emotion of compassion, but it's destructive. It's without, it's no Torah of chesed. See? The Torah holds that without wisdom, you can't be compassionate. In fact, it winds up being cruel, not just to the victims of these people, but to these people themselves. You're not helping them in any way. See, Joseph realized, Joseph knew all of this. And that's why when he accustomed them, that you can't just get food for free. It doesn't work that way. You've made mistakes. You're going to have to face the consequences. You're going to have to part with your possessions. They learned a tremendous lesson. And that's why the next time they came around, they were real, they were sober. You're right. What can we do? We're not entitled to food. There's no entitlement over here. You don't owe us anything. In today's society, the government owes everybody. No matter what they're doing, people can go off and do the craziest things. The government isn't doing enough for them. That's what I meant by the attitude of AIDS. I mean, these people should recognize that their own behavior is that brought it about. They're not entitled, to a purpose of all of this. And what does it have to do with what we mentioned at the very beginning? I believe that the purpose of all of this, aside from the fact that Joseph was a just individual, and that he would never use his power to subjugate other people or to harm other people, he wanted to be helpful to the land of Egypt, and he wanted to teach them the ways of justice, and he wanted to be kind to them. But behind everything else was his realization that his own people, that the next phase of Jewish history, the Jews would have to be living in the land of Egypt. So he wanted to set up the best possible situation to enable them to be hospitable to the Jewish people, to give them a foothold in the land so that they could live there and grow there and develop there, and to remove to the greatest extent possible the hostility of the Egyptians. And he did succeed to a tremendous degree. That's why this sequence ends, the whole story, after they say, Hechi Yisano, right, you've kept us alive, and then it describes, he set up the system, then it says, at 27, and Israel dwelled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they took hold in there, and they grew and prospered, you see? Which means that Joseph did everything to create the situation for them. Now, to create the situation for them entailed two things. Let's just go back to the very beginning. Remember I mentioned before, it says he gathered up all the money? He gathered up all the money and gave it to Pharaoh? So what was the point of all that? It seems to me that, and we also have to ask ourselves, as we did at the beginning, as soon as he makes up with the brothers, he tells them, hurry, bring the family down. Bring the family down. And don't wait. Right? And tell my father about all my power, all my glory. It's like, you know, it seems as unnecessary. What was the emergency? Why did he have to tell Jacob about his position and so forth? And you see that Jacob was very reluctant to come down. God had to appear to him and reassure him. He didn't want to come down. I would say, like, because his purpose was to keep, as he mentioned to the brothers in the reconciliation, he says, don't feel bad, it wasn't such a terrible thing. God sent me in front of you for salvation. In other words, if this would not have happened if I had not been sent down here, and all these events, and my becoming, you know, the ruler, then the whole family would have been wiped out. Which meant that they were in a very tough situation. This was the second year into the family. They had 5 years to go. And Yosef knew that he could not keep the family alive unless they came down to Egypt. Unless they came down to Egypt. And that's what the Ramban says. Of course, the question is, if he's in such a powerful position and so on and so forth, so he could visit with his father, they could stay there, and he could send them food. And he says, for political reasons, the Ramban says, Yosef could not do that. Because they would suspect him. Why is he sending food to foreigners? There the people are starving. You see, he knew how difficult it would be. The people are starving. They would suspect that perhaps he's setting up a system for his family. He's using our money, and he's sending food over there. Who knows what? So therefore, Yosef knew that the only way that he could sustain them was if they came down, and the only way that he could get them to come down and get them a comfortable situation is if he explained to Pharaoh, and then Pharaoh, of course, would want them to come be part of the land. But there was no choice. There was no choice. That's why he said he knew the moment was propitious at that point. They must hurry. We have to act right now. Because we have to uproot. There is no way we can continue our existence. The only way I can secure a good situation is by presenting this plan to Paro. At this point in time, Paro needs me. I've got all the power. And Paro will be very happy to meet my father. He's told him about his great father. This great. You see later on the respect that Egypt had for Yaakov. When Jacob died, the whole land of Egypt mourned him for 70 days. So he had a tremendous name, a tremendous reputation. So now is the time. Do not tarry, because I've got to. Now I can get you a situation, the best possible situation. But once we do that, it's going to have to be permanent, because it can't just be temporary. And then they go back, because then they're going to be breaking their word. It's going to be a chilul Hashem. In other words, he couldn't fool them. Joseph had no choice. He had to bring them down. And once he brought them down, they're going to have to stay there. This is their new habitation. Therefore, Joseph did everything to see to it. To see to it that the situation that the brothers would have would be most beneficial, most propitious, in terms of not having to face the hatred of the Egyptians. Now, he did it in two ways. He did it in two ways.
Well, after the famine is over, then the Egyptians are not going to have aggression towards
Joseph. He did it in two ways. He did it in two ways. You have to understand, he had to deal with two issues over here, with two forces. First of all, he had to deal with Pharaoh. He had to deal with Pharaoh. Because you're not dealing, this wasn't a democracy. He was an emperor. So he wanted, of course, that Pharaoh should be on his side. Not just temporarily. At this time, Pharaoh was on his side. But he knew that every political achievement is temporary. You have to realize this. Nobody knows this. Realize that every political attainment is always temporary. Because no one knows this better than Bush. 2 years ago, he had 90% approval ratings. If anybody would have said that he'd be defeated by an unknown governor from Arkansas, it would have been insane. But you see that it's a question of what have you done for me lately? People didn't see, again, it was the economy. The economy is a very important factor. So he was perceived as a great hero, but that, you know, the emotions wore off. Then the poverty, you know, then the bad years came, and Bush went down in defeat. Yosef knew that after, you got to move now, after the 7 years of famine, when things get back to normal, then his achievement, his popularity, you see, will begin to receive. Now, you can see as you read the story that Joseph's position did receive, his influence did go down. So he had to do everything immediately. But he had to do, you see, he had to earn the gratitude of Pharaoh. That's why it says that he gathered all the money. He didn't take one penny for himself. He gave it all to Pharaoh. Because it's true that the years will go by, but that tremendous bank account will always be there. And every time he looks at the bank account, he'll think of Yosef in a positive kind of a way. So he wanted to earn the everlasting gratitude of the leader. And of course, the Pharaoh will have a son. The money will go to the son. That was one way. He had to deal with Pharaoh. But he realized also that Pharaoh is not enough. That he has to deal with, there are people. He didn't want them to face the hatred, the hostility of the people. Let's face it. Throughout Jewish history, this was always a tug of war. The Jews were invited to many nations. They begged by the kings. You know, that's the whole history of the Middle Ages. The King of Spain, the King of England, they would invite them in because they needed them for economic reasons. But then eventually the hostility of the masses would build up and they put pressure through the clergy on the king, and finally there were expulsions. You know, the king didn't have such absolute power. If there was tremendous hatred from the people, then how long could the situation last? So Joseph did everything possible to change, to bring about a change in the attitude of the people. And he did it by saving them. By saving them and by doing an act of such graciousness, magnanimity, that would create a tremendous impression upon them. That he, and you see the tremendous brilliance that he used, by not giving them the food immediately, by making them part with all of their possessions, with their animals, he taught them a lesson that you don't have a right to demand from the government, that you have to face the consequences, and they accepted it. And then when they came to him, willing to give up everything, their land and themselves as slaves, then he took their offer and he used it in such a way that they would feel that this is the most wonderful person in the world. They were able to appreciate it. You see, had he not done the previous thing, they never would have appreciated the second kindness. There wouldn't have been any appreciation because everything is coming to us. So then he removed the stigma of being refugees by redistributing the people. It had that effect. And he left the people with a tremendous sense of gratitude. And that's why it says that he was able to create a situation in which the Jews could grow and multiply and prosper. Of course, later on he couldn't, like any historical situation, it was temporary. By Yaakov, there came a time when a new king arose over Egypt, and that's a different story. But what we are seeing over here is another expression of the tremendous political and psychological insight of Joseph, and how he used the opportunities that he had, not for his own enrichment, to benefit the people and to sanctify the name of God and to create a situation so that the brothers could prosper.